So sitting here in White Earth at the White Earth Community Center with Judy Toppings. Good afternoon, Judy.
Good afternoon.
I thank you so much for taking the time to tell us your story about you being an artist and the type of art that you do and how you got started and just sharing with us. So just go ahead and start talking about whatever you want to about sharing your story of art.
Okay. I've probably been quilting longer than I've been doing, but I do pottery too, and I dig up my own clay from White Earth here. But I've been doing that probably for 20 years, but quilting I've been doing for like 40 years, and some of my quilts are in the museum and in St. Paul, and one of them traveled all the way around the United States, was in a museum in New York, and another one of my friends saw it in Arizona.
Holy.
So, but I've never seen it. I've never been there. I could never afford to go, but yeah, so there's several quilts that the St. Paul Museum has. So
did you sell that quilt then? How does it travel like that?
Actually, the Michigan State University bought the quilt from 20 Native ladies from across the United States and Hawaii, gathered there, and then we all did quilts. They purchased quilts from everybody. Then we all did one square for the New York Museum one. I haven't seen a picture of that one. Then we did one for the museum in Michigan too, so they got a combination of all those quilts, and they put it out in a book.
Oh, really?
And I was looking at that book the other day, and I thought a lot of those ladies probably aren't here anymore.
Oh, really?
Because a lot of them, there was about three of them from South Dakota, and they were probably like close to 80 then, so I thought that was back in like, I think, 92, around there, so I said a lot of them most of them were older, but there was a couple younger than I was, so we're probably the only ones still alive. And then Bill Means saw that one quilt in New York, and he was surprised because he seen my name on there, and he was surprised to see it, and he congratulated me when he seen me, and I said, oh, good, somebody saw it from home anyway around here, because I said I didn't get a chance to get to New York to see that particular show. And then I started with pottery probably back in about 94. My cousin Carrie Ortiz started it, and I think they got grant money to do workshops in Red Lake, Leech Lake, Mille Lacs, and then here at White Earth. And so I've been doing that ever since, and just firing out in the old way, the way they used to do it. And a lot of people don't know that in Ojibwe, we say Gawababiganikog, and that really referring to the white clay here, not really white earth. And where my grandma came from, a lot of people came from the west, the clay is red there.
Mm-hmm.
And here it's white, and that's really what it means in Ojibwe. And a lot of people, I think, really don't realize that's really what they noticed when they moved here, was the difference in the earth, you know, the soil.
Yep.
And the clay is really not just the earth, it's just the clay that they're referring to. And I think back then, too, they probably did, I never did research around here, but I think in White Earth, they actually did make bricks here and use some of the clay from here to, I think somebody said the old school wasn't the old fire hall here that used to be, but the power ground was made here, but I'm not sure where.
Yeah.
I was from Rice Lake, part of the opposite end of the reservation, so back when we were kids, we didn't come to White Earth very often except to go to the clinic, maybe, so I wasn't familiar with living around here in White Earth all that time, but yeah, so I started, now Carrie, my cousin, is no longer here either. She died quite young.
Yeah, she did. She's a friend of mine.
Yeah.
I watched her make many pots, but I never made a pot with her.
Yeah.
That's kind of, I don't know if I have a regret, but I kind of, one of the things you wish you would have did, like in your wish list of things you should have done, should have made a pot with Carrie.
Yeah, I stayed with her after, like, I can't remember what year that was, but I spent about a year over there. So we did, we did pots and we did lots of different, art things. But we tried burning with some pine that we had there. So we got to try different things. And right now I said I'm kind of working with jewelry, making smaller things.
Mm-hmm.
Although it takes just as long to get them really compact, but I thought make some smaller things that maybe people can afford.
Yeah.
I'll say I'm selling White Earth one little piece at a time all over again. At least I'm enrolled. So
what's your, if people are thinking about starting with pottery or trying to do pottery, is there a wood, as you fire, is there a wood that's better to fire with than anything?
Yeah, you need a really hard wood, so if you really have to know what green wood is. So I'm surprised a lot of people don't really know.
Yeah.
You got to have good dry hardwood, something that's going to burn a long time and keep that fire getting hot enough, long enough, you know, enough mm-hmm. to it. But you can burn where you don't even need a kiln, or you don't need it. You can make your own tools. So that's one thing nice. You don't need to invest a lot of money. And
yep.
And if you, you know, if you can still get out there and go in lots of clay all over, you don't even have to use a shovel. If you go where they're building houses and stuff, you'll usually find clumps of clay there. And even got some from the mission school when they were building the Circle of Life school.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of clay there, and I came before I even had buckets. I was putting big clumps in my trunk, and then I went got some more pails, went got some more clay there. So it was a lot of clay there, so I can see why they call it, I call that my simulation pottery, because it's so much. So my mom went to school there too, and my auntie, and my mom would have been 100 years old last year. So
oh wow.
So she was she'd went down to school there for, I don't know how long she actually went to school there, but yeah, she went there, and then she went to Wapton, all these. So we're all a product of the boarding school area.
Yep.
We're the finished product.
The finished product. The molded product.
The molded product, yeah. Yeah.
So I went to your class, and I went to another potter from Red Lake. I don't know if you know her, but Doreen Wells is learned from Carrie as well. And we had a little class over at Leech Lake, and I never, you know, I'm not good with clay. I'm not that kind of artist. I'm not good at it. But one of my friends was saying, well, what did you mix with your clay for grit? And I didn't mix anything in with grit. And I found some clay out in the woods after I came to your workshop. And I was back at Leech, and I was just walking through the woods, and it was really dry. Mm-hmm. And I was coming upon a place that's usually wet, and it wasn't wet, and I saw the clay, and it was more the white color clay that
yeah.
you guys had over here, and I got all excited, and I went back, and I got like five gallon buckets full of clay just quickly, and I don't think it's white, but it's tan, it's light.
Yeah.
And I want to clean it and block it up for my family, because, you know, my sister and my nephew, they were better potters than I. But my friend was talking about this grit, and what is he talking about when the grit part of it, of adding to it? I'm not understanding that.
Well, they call it tempering too, but if you're talking about metal stuff, it means something different. But
uh-huh.
Well, they actually made these pots to cook in, and they were pretty good size. And if you want something to hold up better, you have to either you can add sand, not just fine sugar sand or anything, but you could add that to it. And they used to add crushed shells, grind up shells, or the old pottery that breaks, they'd crush that up and then add that to the clay. It gives it a little more strength if you're going to make something huge. So the point was to make it waterproof so it wouldn't leak.
Mm-hmm.
And so to make it stronger and stuff. But for smaller things, I just used like just without anything in it, because whiter clay does have quite a bit of grit in it too. But you'd want to make sure all especially limestone, some of the rock that's already in it, if there's limestone in it, your pots will crack when you're, because that heating temperature, that they'll explode before they get cooked.
Okay.
So if you get limestone in it, you could have a bunch of cracked pots, so you can't put, you know, grind that up. But I've actually crushed rock too, and put crushed rock in there. But if you get, you know, you can find, especially on one of the gravel roads or something, you could sift that and get some of the, you don't want the real big rocks, but you don't want real fine like sugar sand or anything in there either, because
really?
that doesn't hold up very good. But they're just sort of a medium size, and get that in there and make sure there's no limestone in there.
So you mentioned shells. You ever familiar with like raising fowl, chickens, and stuff like that? You get that ground up stuff at the feed store. It's ground up, I think, oyster shells or something like that.
That might work. I don't know. Yeah. I've never tried that, but I've crushed up the regular clam shells that they used to have.
Oh, yeah.
But I find they're really hard to come by nowadays. So I've checked where we used to always get them and find them when we were kids. You don't find many anymore, and I don't know if it's the water pollution or what it is, that you just don't see them anymore.
Our changing earth. You know?
Yeah.
That's kind of scary, because they're like a important, like, I think
upsetting,
you want to get scientific, they call it a keystone species,
mm-hmm.
somebody that's indicating that there's something wrong, and I agree with you. I don't find as many clamshells as I used to.
Yeah, I think I found some over in Mille Lacs over there along the shore, but we used to find them. I live in Elbow Lake Village now, and I said we used to always find them when we were kids, and I haven't seen any clams. And then we try to get them open, you know, when they're not ready to come out, they have a hard time. Of course, we were only like 7, 8 years old then, but now I said I've looked around. I don't think I've ever found one there. And we used to always, you know, and then later on we'd find them when they were already open. But now I just don't see too many around here. Yeah. But we've gotten other shells too that people have gotten. I don't know where they're all, probably snail shells or whatever. So
that's
we've
what
tried some of that too.
Yeah.
So.
I
still experiment too with different, you know, things. Like I said, I crushed rock up, but that gets kind of old after a while, beating on it, you know, getting that. So, but yeah, and then getting good dry, either maple, oak, or some of the hardwoods. So you have to know what a hardwood tree is. But I think most of the older people from my generation know that, because a lot of us had to burn wood.
Exactly.
When we were growing up, but now. I think once I asked some younger kid to go get a wiener roasting stick, and they come up with some dry wood. You know? But that wouldn't last very long if you're holding that over the fire. Your hot dog would end up down in the flames. And so having and there's plenty of clay around. Like I say, you may not be good at anything, but it takes practice. Like I said, it took me a long time to, you know, just to get, because I'd never done pottery before either.
Well, yeah, so how long have you said you've been doing it, 20 years?
Yeah, 20 years, you know, but at least every year, and I've never had a good workplace, so I said it's been doing it here and there, but I always wanted to, maybe this spring I want to try to make a bigger one. Somebody wanted to make a parching kettle.
Oh, wow, that would be...
And I wondered when they came here years ago how they parched that rice, and I said they must have knew that about the, you know, making clay pots, and before the coming, but once the iron kettles start coming in, well, then I think people just kind of forgot that, you know, that they did use this for their cooking and everything.
You probably make the biggest pots I've seen anybody make. You make a good sized pot.
Yeah, but I want to make a big, you can cook a whole deer in it.
Oh, now that's a big pot.
but some of the ones I did make, you know, I got a place out there now, and I get tarps. This spring, I'm going to try to make a big one. So I have to gather up quite a bit of clay for that. But
how about that patina? You have a nice patina look on all your pots. How do you get that? Just polishing?
Yeah, that's just really just polishing with, I use a stone. Mm-hmm. But years ago, too, they used to use paddles, but you got to compact it really hard. The more you compact it, the more watertight it gets. And then more or less likely, because they actually carried water in them, cooked in them. And of course, if you wouldn't want your soup all over your all over your outside fire, if you're cooking, there would be nothing left in there.
I'm trying to
no
eat
juices.
It.
Yeah, so that's that was the purpose of paddling. But I use a rock, but I was thinking if I make this big one, I might have to use something, make a big paddle or something to use. But on some of the smaller bowls I make, I just use a rock, and I get some almost shiny, but it takes a lot of polishing, so your arm does get tired, you know, from rubbing and knowing the right dryness to when you do that too. So it's just it's like a waiting game. You have to kind of babysit that pot all day. When it starts looking kind of leathery, that's when you want to really get that shine. I don't know if you've ever been stuck. When we were kids, we used to get stuck quite often, and especially if it's that clay, and your tires will spin, and you'll look at it afterwards, it's just shiny.
Yep.
So that's basically what you're doing, making that pot and getting it really compact. And if you have that constant rubbing with another smooth rock, but the natural smooth rocks are too hard to find.
Yeah, they are.
Along with straight poles. You look out in the forest and man, all those trees look really nice and straight, you know, but you go out there and try to find a push pole and you're racing. Then they don't look so straight anymore.
Nope.
You know? You try to find one with not so many knots on it.
That's when doing things the way we used to do them, it raises your awareness level of and your connection to the earth so much, because like you said, they look straight until you go looking for the right thing. Or, you know, it looks like there's a ton of rocks out there, but try to find the right rock for what you're doing. Then it's like, oh, this isn't so easy.
And our ancestors really knew all this stuff, you know, and we were called ignorant and dumb for so long, I think we got to believe it. But really now I think we have lost connection with, we don't know, and Earth provides everything, you know, for us, or the air we breathe, everything, the water we drink, and that's really, you know, and a lot of us don't know anything about it. We've lost connection. Yep. And as Native people, we used to always, and it was used for everything that the Creator put on here. Now it's, like I say, a lot of our younger kids who, I don't know if they had to recognize some of the what's in our backyard, you know. White ash, could you go find a white ash sapling? Yeah. Or red willow, even a couple of people my age were saying, what does red willow look like?
Yep.
You know, and this is stuff that grows, you know, all around us, and there's a use for everything.
That's I had someone ask me that. It was someone, you know, older than me. They came up to me and we were at an event or whatever, and they said, hey, do you know where I could find some red willow? And I thought maybe they were joking with me, because you had to drive past it to get to where we were at. And I was like, that stuff you drove past on the way in, and they're like, oh, it's out there. They were serious. Mm-hmm. And I felt bad, because I thought they were teasing, but they weren't, you know. That's just, they didn't know, you know, and it's not their fault. Like you said, we're a product of boarding schools, we're molded to be a certain way, and they think certain things are important, and our way of knowing is important. We need to connect back. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking of someone told me that they had a child that's I think they say it's ADHD or whatever, you know, they're on medications and things like that, and they were saying that child was working with clay. And it was actually the calmest that they'd seen their child be for a long time. And I got thinking about that. I was like, wow, you know, every class I've been to, yours, or the one we had with Doreen, when everyone was working with the clay, there was this like peacefulness in the room. Like people were happy, you know, and it was, I think it was feeling the clay. I think there's a therapeutic value to, you know, working with wood or working with clay. And I was wondering how many kids that are on these medications to calm them would not need that if you had a table in the corner with, you know, clay for them to work with or wood for them to work with, you know. It has its own medicine for us.
Yeah. Like I say, I enjoy doing it, and I like doing that. But I go from one extreme to that. Now I'm looking to work with quilting again.
Are you?
We got our workshop finally, because that's the big thing around here. Nobody's got really a lot of space in their house. So we're looking to do I want to do a veterans quilt. I mean, when I started it, I said, I remember I got all the pieces to it, but I wanted to do that. And you know, we got a workshop, and I'm just looking to get a printer so that we can do that. It's a community, you know, project, since I'm looking for some youth to help, you know, go ask your parents if, you know, if you got anybody that served in the military with any stories, you know, that about relatives. And so we're looking forward to getting that going and getting our workshop going so we can do that. And along with a women's warrior quilt too, because I know my sister and a lot of the people that were a little older than me actually were in the military. Mm-hmm. And I said, never could understand it, because we'd go out and fight for a country, and then we come back here and fight for the rights, you know, that we don't have even. So.
Exactly.
But I do understand that people, you know, if you don't have any money and you know, your family needs money, that, you know, you do anything to help bring money into the house. And so a lot of people did serve in the military.
Yeah.
And like I said, my uncles did a lot of my uncles and. It served during, one of my uncles was at Pearl Harbor when it was bombed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was a lifetime Navy person, but he's buried at Natawash there now. And his wife was a showgirl, and that didn't go over very big. They were from a wealthy family.
Yeah.
And she was an only child, and she said, well, she was about 84 years old. They lived in Long Beach, and they donated all their stuff to the VA, their house and everything. They didn't have any kids. And So I think her mother and her just kind of didn't speak for years because, I think it was probably burlesque that she was in. But, and that didn't go over very well. Then she turned around and married a Native man, which probably went over just as well.
She was a wild child.
Yeah, but she made arrangements, so she's buried up in Nativash, too.
Yeah.
Since her family was pretty, I think, well-to-do from New York. She said her dad left and left her a big diamond ring, and then she never got to see him very much after that.
So. Oh, yeah.
So, but she stuck with my uncle all those years, and because she said I talked to her, and she was when I was telling me they were at Pearl Harbor when it was bombed. And she said, they wanted to send me to the mainland, but I wouldn't leave Lou. She said, I stayed right there. So she stayed right there. And
sounds like a good woman.
Yeah. And then my mom was always saying, oh, I wonder how, and her name was Mary. Mary, same as my mom's.
Yeah.
Too. And she told my mom's, that she, she'd always send my mom a Christmas card or something. My mom said, I haven't heard from Mary out there for years. I said, Mom, she'd been over 100. I said, and she didn't have no family, so who would let us know? I said,
oh, yeah.
And then, but when she was here burying my uncle, she must have made arrangements to be buried. They're not buried side by side, but she did arrange to have her body, back up here.
Yeah.
But she lived to be in her 90s, too, so she... But she'd already made those arrangements. She wasn't even going to leave him after she died, so she's up there.
Well, that's a good story.
Yeah, but that was kind of funny. My mom's when I looked at it, and her name, my mom's name was Mary Ann Murray, and so was this other, my auntie. Her name was Mary Ann Murray, too. Mary.
Quite a coincidence.
My mom's friend saw her that, I didn't know Mary died, and everything. Oh. Then she ran into my mom in the Wobbin grocery store. She couldn't believe it, so that she'd see a ghost or something. But yeah. Mostly through most of my art, I do try to get the history in there of our people.
Yeah.
Through the quilts, I've done a lot of history quilts and kind of depict. I did a Bill of Rights one that was in Bemidji for a while. And
I might have seen that.
Actually, I donated it to Tara Mason for her campaign, but she still got it. But I don't think I got a picture of that. And there's some few quilts I've made. And then during 9/11, too, I made one. I was working in Detroit Lakes teaching language and culture there. And we made that one. And I never got a picture of that one either. But one of the students that won it, he still got it. So one of these days, I'm gonna see if I can get a picture of it.
You should.
That was some of the things that were happening after 9/11 happened. That we were doing a quilt in Detroit Lakes, so we clipped some newspaper clippings and other things that were going on at the time right after 9/11. So.
So are your quilts mostly block-style quilts, or do you get into
I do star quilts. I usually put the star in just about everything in some form or another. I had some of the stars in there. So then I do make a... I think I did the one Manitowoc one, that when Manitowoc used to be in Callaway there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did one for that. They actually commissioned me to do that one. And the University of Michigan wanted that one really bad, too. But here, a friend of mine, that after they went out of business there, a friend of mine must have bought that quilt. And I felt bad because I couldn't make her to her funeral in Red Lake. And then I talked to her husband, and he said, I never signed that quilt. And he said, she figured it was either yours or somebody else's. Well, so she had that quilt, and she used it right up until she died. So I felt better about that she got that she got that quilt, even though I couldn't make it up to Red Lake that day. So
good.
Anyway, anything else you want to know?
Well, I think thank you so much for taking the day, the time and the day to share with me. If there's anything else you want to share about your art or... there was one question I've been asking all the artists, and I think it kind of goes back to your quilting together as a community about... How do you think art can heal us as a people? I think, just my personal belief is that even when we get together and like sewing or get together and carve, it brings together that social aspect. It's a safe place. It's an alternative to other poor choices.
Yeah, I think that's why I say I'm glad we got the workplace up here because what we want to do, Tito, all of us are getting, up in the 70s or better. And I don't think some of the younger kids know how to sew or don't know how to do some of the lost art, you know. Yeah. I think if we pick up, don't know how to thread a needle, probably even, you know. So, yeah. but I think it's a way for the kids to learn and to pass some of these things down and work on that. You know, some mm-hmm. of the kids can still do that, and also just spending time with kids, because I think kids need that. Just sometimes you don't have to say anything. There's just being there. That's not so much gabbing all the time, but just yeah. you're sharing something, I think. And
sharing your time and yourself yeah, and your talent. Yeah,
yeah. And you are there if they need you.
Yeah.
Because I used to do hair years ago, too, and I said, when I got to be a single parent, I said, that's why I went back to school, because I said, when I was the busiest, that's when my kids had free time, you know, and it was all the holidays and stuff, and yeah. so I just didn't want my kids, you know, being raised by, you know, babysitters and stuff on
yeah.
the time when they got, you know, break from school. So I wanted to be there and not have to be. I spent enough time away from them by just having to work all the time. And I think that's probably kind of true with a lot of people. Is, you know, it takes both two people to try to support a, you know, family and so forth.
It does.
Know, the kids who's got the, you know, nobody's got the, a lot of time anymore, it seems like, so.
So and that gets back to that, you know, it takes a village to raise a kid,
yeah,
you know, because,
yeah.
Yeah, you're right. It does take pretty much two parents working, especially when you have, you know, minimum wage jobs and things like
yeah.
that.
Mm-hmm.
So if we all care for one another and help out where we can, give those kids that opportunity to...
Yeah, like I say, it's not always talking to, you know... with them either, just being there, because I said yep. my kids probably couldn't have cared less if I was ever home, but if I wasn't there, you know, they were looking for me, but if, yeah. you know, I could be there, and I could have been like part of the wall or something as much as they talked to me, but yet, you're, yep. if they do need you, you are on hand, you know,
yeah.
so that maybe they'll once in a while ask your opinion on something. Okay, I'm glad to share.
All right, Miigwech, thanks so much.
Okay.
This program has been funded by the Legacy Arts, Culture, and Heritage Fund of Minnesota.